Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Believe in UCLA Football Podcast. We'll be here with a new episode for you right after this quick note. Football is back, and BetOnline is your number one information source for all of your sports wagering info with all the up-to-the-minute stats, news, scores, and matchup breakdowns. Get the latest game odds, spreads, and totals from the NFL and college football right at your fingertips with BetOnline's real updates and statistics, news, and odds. From week one all the way to the college football playoff and Super Bowl, BetOnline gives you access to the best football promotions and contests available anywhere online. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Remember, use the promo code BELIEVE to get your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Believe in UCLA Football Podcast. My name is James Williams, a reporter and editor for the Orange County Register and the Southern California News Group. And as always, I'm joined here by former UCLA linebacker Josh Woods. Josh, what's going on, man?
I went back home to California.
And you didn't go to San Diego, why?
My flight was Saturday. We had practice Monday morning, or Sunday morning. So damn. I had to... Yeah, man.
That's tough.
the main focus of this bye week one was to see my family. You know, it's been, I haven't seen them all summer.
Mm-hmm.
And two was to get my quarter clothes.
Your quarter clothes?
Like my cold clothes.
Oh yeah, your cold clothes. Okay, to change seasons. So right,
I took,
right.
Yeah. So I had to take home, you know, the shorts, the t-shirts, the tank tops.
You cycle it out.
I had to bring back the puffer, the sweatpants, the hoodies.
So you probably leave it. I mean, you probably showing up with two bags, but you leave it with like three or four. Because how do you pack a puffer?
See, that's the thing. Like, I took back so much stuff that I was able to, you know, pack in my puffer pretty tight into my suitcase. And then when I'm coming back, I'll just wear it back. So hopefully it doesn't, you know, so it doesn't take up much space.
Mm-hmm. Damn. I mean, you've been doing it for a while now, so you got a system.
But it's so hot. It was so hot being home. I was
carrying a puffer just to the airport. Everyone's like, what the hell? They're going to say, he ain't from around here, when he actually is. That's the sad part. All right. Well, I'm glad you made it back safely. Speaking of San Diego, big win for UCLA. I mean, yeah, a big win. A win's a win. But there's a lot of positives that came out of this game. You got to catch some of the game before your flight. What was your what were your thoughts on it looks like we may have some answers at the quarterback position. If you ask Chip, he'll say no. But Dante Morgan, the start, staying in for a lot of the game. They said Schley was going to play. He plays fourth quarter. Just kind of got him in to kind of get him in. But what are your thoughts on Dante?
More. Mm-hmm. We asked for it, and they delivered. I mean, some of the throws he makes, like, makes him look like a vet. Like, he's making some vet throws. And like we said, like, his ceiling is tremendously high. And I think, you know, it's best that he gets these reps under his belt moving forward if he's going to be the guy when we go into Pac-12 play. A game like San Diego State is a, you know, great time for him to get those reps in, that, you know, full game. It's different, you know, playing a possession of like how they were rotating, right? Versus playing the entire game and all the different situations and like really having a rhythm and a flow it's different than when you're rotating and going into Pac-12 play. I just, like we talk about, I don't think you can rotate at the quarterback position. So having him starting to get that experience and exposure to being a full-time starter, I think now was the perfect time, and you know, for him to get ready and prime up for those bigger games. So we'll see what the rotation is for the next game. I hope it's not like, okay, Dante got almost a full game, now Schley's gonna get a lot of time and then a little bit of Garbers. Although I really did like the changeup of Schley, because you have with Garbers and Dante are more, I mean, pro style in the pocket passing quarterbacks. With Schley, he had the threat of running more, and it's almost a switch up. You know, it's a big switch up to their styles of play. So like he's just a threat of when he's in. It's not really like wildcat, but just having the threat of a running quarterback kind of changes that dynamic and makes teams have to, you're gonna have to prepare for that. So the thing is, like when there's a certain package or something, teams will have to take a period out of the week,
right,
just to go, you know, practice those different situations. So now teams are gonna be like, you know, you're gonna have majority of your reps practicing for either Dante Moore or Ethan Garbers, but you're gonna have a period in there once or twice a week where you're preparing for a quarterback that can run with Schley coming in. Because I've seen games where teams prepare all week for, you know, a certain style of play of a quarterback. I mean, and teams probably, it's the same thing where I'm saying when teams are preparing for Dorian versus when Garbers got in.
Right.
Where a team prepares all week, though, for a pocket passing quarterback, and you're probably focusing on coverage and pass rush all week. And then if something happens to the other quarterback and they put in a quarterback they can run, I think this happened in 2015 versus University of Arizona. The quarterbacks, whoever, I think it was Brian Dawkins got hurt or something, and they put like a receiver or some type of guy like that, gadget guy at quarterback, and they were running like a read option, zone read.
Mm-hmm.
I think they ended up running for like 200 yards.
Jesus.
And it was because all week prepare for a certain style of play, and then you have a running quarterback or something change up. Same thing happened in 2016 when Khalil Tate, it was the first time Khalil Tate played. And all week they're preparing for, I forgot who the quarterback was at the time, but he was still more of a throwing quarterback. And then Khalil Tate gets in, and it's like he's running zone read, and like you're only like only run thing you're worried about is inside zone, outside zone, but like zone read now that he's pulling, right. It's a whole different element to where you haven't practiced for all week and it kind of hits. So like having a guy like Schley for that switch up, I knowing Chip and the way, you know, his brain works with offenses and all the different types of looks and formations, I see Schley having a package every week, even if he's not the first or second string quarterback. Almost in a way of like a Taysom Hill type, kind of.
That's what some people were saying, yeah.
Kind of what we thought that Colson Yankoff might have been. I think Schley will be that package guy of he can get in and just give a different look from time to time.
Okay. For whatever reason, on my stat sheet here that they gave us, they didn't even put Schley on here, but I don't know why. So I don't know what his passing and running stats were. I know he did get some runs. But going back to Dante as a passer, 17 of 27 passes, no interceptions, 290 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Not bad at all.
And one of the things is like how much he spread the ball out. I mean, there's only Logan Loya had 4 catches. Other than that, it's a lot of guys had 2 catches, 1 catch. I know as a receiver, that might be annoying. But I mean, for spreading the ball out, that's as good as it gets.
I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but maybe this is like a good learning lesson of if J Mike's busy or they're doing, you know, they're locking them down, I guess. But you have other guys like that are getting reps and like getting the ball, and you know, everybody's staying ready. Everyone's not saying they don't throw my way, anyways. But the one thing I noticed about J Mike. There was a drive where Moore threw to him twice and it was PI, And then PI again called on the defender. The defender, he can't keep up with them, huh? Is that normally what happens? Like, it was two times in a row where J. Mike was kind of breaking away from him, and I feel like he's just holding on for dear life not to.
I feel like he's one of those guys where it's, I mean, of course, it's 50, it's always 50-50, but with him, it might be a catch or a PI almost every time, just mm-hmm. the kind of receiver he is, where either he's going to make that catch or something prevented him from making that catch, and it probably right. wasn't clean. So, yeah, and also, yeah, Dante having that faith in him and having that mm-hmm. That savviness to him of where he notices the matchup, like you said, where that guy can't guard him. And if I put it up there, like I said, either he's going to get it or you're going to get the PI call.
Now, there's a few things that I took away from this. So, one, looking at it, J. Mike had three targets. And again, two of them were PIs. I guess he caught one of them if they said he had two catches. Anyways, do you think – I wasn't keeping track of how much more he played after the PIs, but do you think maybe you're taking him out so that they're just like – because if they're just jumping on dude, get PI'ing and stuff, like, I don't know. Am I reading too much into that? Like, if Sturdivant is not getting the ball more than three times, they probably cut him loose a little bit, right, and just had him hanging out, not really in the game if he wasn't necessarily needed. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you never know why certain guys are rotating, guys stepping up. Also, if the coach feels a certain way about how they ran a certain route, or if they, you know, had a mental error, like that type of thing. You never know, especially just the way that Chip likes things ran. There's a lot of rotation. I mean, it's always been that way at every position. And now we're seeing this quarterback rotation. So you never know. I mean, we saw Keegan Jones at receiver. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if he was taking over like the Kazmir Allen role, moving from running back to receiver, mm-hmm. and just trying to find ways to get guys the ball. Because I feel like there's so many different guys that are weapons on the offense, but you only have one ball to go around. So moving guys around, trying to find different ways to use certain different types of people. Like a guy like Josiah Norwood,
mm-hmm. who he wasn't there when you were there. I think he was a walk-on.
He was. So he came in as a walk-on quarterback. Walk-on quarterback.
I did not know that.
On scout team, he would go play receiver, and he ended up doing so good, he ended up going and carving out a receiver role. And a guy, he's always been fast.
Really? I didn't know that.
And seeing him make a play like he did is another thing, like, where I love seeing the guys that, you know, work their butts off to, you know, finally getting the play time, the recognition, and, like, I would say more meaningful reps. You know what I'm saying? Where you have these guys these walk-ons that might, you know, of course it's awesome for anybody to, you know, get reps, especially in the Rose Bowl, and, you know, as a UCLA football player. But when a guy works his butt off and he earns, like, meaningful reps, meaning like reps in the middle of the game, mm-hmm. the score is close, not like in a blowout.
This is 7 minutes in the first, 7 minutes in the first quarter, first play of an offensive drive. Moore throws an 81-yard touchdown to Josiah Norwood, 11-second drive.
Like, that's big, mm-hmm. you know, not just
that's
for
not,
him.
That's not an accident.
And for the Bruins of having another guy, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, another weapon, a guy that could step up and make a catch like that and take it to the crib. Like,
yeah,
you know, that's not, yeah, to outrun everybody like that, that, again, doesn't happen on accident. And, shout out to him. I'm so proud of him for that.
Now,
we were talking about Alex Johnson's, like, another guy, like, mm-hmm. him getting interceptions, him getting meaningful, like, starting, yep. and, like, being one of the highest rated DBs in, you know, mm-hmm. the Pac-12. Like, none of this stuff, like, happened. I said these guys have been, like, working their butts off since they showed up as walk-ons at UCLA, and now seeing them in these roles is just awesome to see.
So, like, for someone like Josiah Norwood, I mean, he can hit that. Recall him being on the field or getting a reception, it's one of these big plays. But so when you see something like that the next week, any, like, the next couple weeks, any of these other teams that are preparing for UCLA, they got to kind of have an eye out for him, right? Because they know if dude's on the field, he could break out. Like, it adds another wrinkle just because he, like, I mean, he's not even on the depth chart. But now you got to keep up with this number, whatever jersey number he is, and be aware of this play in particular, just because, I mean, it could happen. You can get got just like San Diego State did. So I thought that was interesting. One thing I want to talk about with you, we'll talk about some defense in a little bit, but maybe this kind of relates to both offense and defense. I want to talk time of possession. So, as I said, Josiah Norwood, 81-yard pass, first play of an offensive drive. So that was 11 seconds. The second scoring drive for UCLA was finished with the Carson Steele 13-yard run. That drive was 7 plays, 2 minutes and 37 seconds. Then you had the next scoring drive, which was, and these may not all have been in a row, I'm just reading them, the scoring drives. TJ Harden, 59-yard rush. It was a 3-play offensive drive for a minute that lasted 1 minute, 1 second. You had another drive that lasted 56 seconds that ended with Logan Loy again, a 24-yard touchdown pass. And then you had a Carson Ryan 6-yard catch for a touchdown. That drive was 4 minutes and 20 seconds. So you had drives that were 11 seconds, 1 minute, 59 or 56 seconds, and then one that was just like 4 minutes. But what I'm saying is all these drives are like a minute long. If you're on defense, how the hell do you catch a break?
And that was one of the things we always talked about. and it's been since Chip kind of revolutionized college football and offense. One of the like the biggest things, yeah, has been how do you play defense for when your offense is scoring that fast? And that's where it's like staying, you know, being, you know, you're going to be out there more because of that. Where they're not, it's not traditional run, you know, like the old Stanford where they're just like getting, they're taking 3 plays to get a first down and like slowly marching down the field, taking all these minutes off. You know that they can be quick and they can score in literally, like you said, 1, 2, 3 plays. So then you know you're going to have more possessions on defense, which is tougher because, I mean, the more you're out there, the more, you know, there's, like you said, tired and more opportunities for the offense to do things. And one of the things that we had talked about before is like just winning the turnover battle and just having a few stops can win you a game with when you have an offense like that, because you know your offense is going to outscore usually every, you know, they're always going to put points up. So it's like you preventing touchdowns and creating turnovers is a major thing of just winning the game, because, you know, it's there's rounds. That's how they, like, you know, especially when we had Coach Az, because he had, you know, he was a former boxer, and like the analogy of it.
Wait,
was,
what? He was a boxer? That? No. What?
Yes. But one of the analogies is like you're like every game is like a, you know, a boxing match. So you have 12 rounds. So you just need to win more rounds.
That's fair.
So that's, yeah. And the defense was that the defense did kind of, I'm gonna say, annoy me.
We'll get to that in a second. Hold on. I just want to read off the total time of possession to you. UCLA had the ball for 16 minutes and 32 seconds. San Diego State had the ball for 28 minutes and 28 seconds. That's a long time on the field. Thankfully, they got depth, or luckily they have depth at a lot of these positions. But you said the defense annoyed you. Now I'm curious. Why?
Because San Diego State had no business even scoring on the UCLA Bruins. I don't know how they were 2-0. Not even trying to be like disrespectful, but just like they weren't able to throw on other in the first two games.
Yeah,
correct.
Right. Yes. Yeah. They were not. The quarterback was more known for his running than for throwing the ball. Yeah.
I mean, the quarterback still had, you know, 3 interceptions, didn't even throw for 200, but it was just like, it just seemed like there was times where these drives for San Diego were going way longer than they should have been, you know, converting, or guys just seem to be open. I don't know, like if they're running soft zones or It was Miss Simonson, man. I don't know what it was.
Some people were not happy with that secondary.
You were one of those people.
It don't matter to me, but I'm just like, damn, y'all got to do something.
Yeah, it just like, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know what the issue is, but I think secondary is kind of, it's been the weak spot of the defense. And it's one of the things that we talked about all offseason as far as like, this is one of the best front sevens UCLA's had with all the returners. We have, you know, this amazing pass rush. We have these so many linebackers in the depth. And we were like, okay, but who's going to fill in the spot for Blaylock and Mo Osling? Like, you know, what's going to happen?
And I think those spots are good, to be honest. The guys who filled in, Kenny Churchwell, redshirt freshman, Kamari Ramsey, don't seem to be the problem. It's your corners that were there last year. I mean, it was Devin Kirkwood, if I got to be honest. It was just Devin Kirkwood because Humphreys was fine. Jalen Davies has been fine. The thing is, a lot of people are kind of disappointed in Kirkwood. Because we were talking about Twitter Spaces, and it reminds me a lot of what Nate Metters said when he was talking to us. And I don't want to, I'm not trying to put this on Kirkwood or whatever, but it's like there has to be something there. I don't know if it's just he's having his sophomore slump in his junior year, but he's been pretty solid his first, like he played as a true freshman when whoever other cornerbacks were there, I can't think of names at the time, but there was more than enough talent there. Quantrez Knight was there, Quentin Lake was there. There's secondary, everybody was in there, and he was still getting time as a true freshman. He played it pretty well for himself last year. This year, you got three DB coaches on the staff. What is the problem?
That might be one of the issues.
And maybe it's a new defense. I don't know, maybe.
That's what I'm saying. So for him, I mean, we know that he's talented. We know that he's capable. I'm saying it could be one of those things where it's too many people in his ear. Like a new technique versus what he was used to playing before, and he's trying to figure out that switch of how they want him to play certain things. It could be the play calling. He's used to, like I said, more soft zone, more.
And he is going up against he's going up against the number one receiver more often than not. So, I mean, you're not gonna be perfect against the number one receiver. The number one receiver is gonna get his sometimes.
But okay. Coastal Carolina, they had a dog. San Diego State, they didn't have any receivers that were just like.
I didn't know any receivers' names going into this game.
They're not any of the guys at that school across the street. They're not any of the guy.
Not Oregon. Not.
They're not the Colorado.
They're not Washington. Yeah, they're not Washington. Washington has guys.
So I'm just that worries me about Pac-12 play when it comes to, you know, when we're really playing offenses that have guys across the board.
But do you think this kind of goes to what I had mentioned to you? I don't know if it was a couple episodes ago. Remember the corner? There was that. I don't think I ever sent you that video of the cornerbacks coach going in on the guys on the corners being like, yo, I can't play for you. Y'all got to hype it up. Y'all got to show some effort. Like, maybe that's what he was talking about.
But no, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like maybe that was one day. Like, I don't know if that was a.
So there's been some stuff that has kind of happened as a result of this. And maybe we're reading too much into it. Maybe not. But not Jalen Davies. What is old boy's name? Jaden Marshall? Yeah, I think it's Jaden Marshall. He was a receiver and they moved him over to cornerback, so everyone's like, oh, what's going on there? And then let me make sure I got his name right. Jaden Marshall. Yeah, I was right. Jaden Marshall moves over to cornerback from the receiver room. I believe he's a second year guy. But then also you're gonna have to let me explain it first, and then you can tell me. But I want to know how you guys know who starts, knows the rotation. How do you know who's playing, who's starting a game? Because Kirkwood is the starter. He's been on the depth chart as a starter. All of a sudden, they send, like they always do, they send the media, they send out the depth chart. And this week, at first, it said Jalen Davies, Kirkwood. So they switched him. 20 minutes later, after everybody posted the new depth chart, they switched it back. They sent a new depth chart and said, "This there was a mistake. Oops." And put Kirkwood back on top and Jalen Davies second. How do you guys... The thing is the depth chart never really changes. The depth chart still has Ali Kaho on it, even though he's in a boot, is unavailable, yada, yada, yada. But the depth chart doesn't really change. So for there to be a change and then all of a sudden it gets changed back, I'm just curious how the players know, because now the players see that on social media is what I'm saying. So how do you guys know? I'm assuming they would know the truth, right? Or they know what the rotation is going to be that for this upcoming game, right? Like, you guys are, do they post a depth chart on the wall, or how do you guys find out? Is it just,
I mean, it's just who's up with, yeah, pretty much who takes first team reps. I mean, we don't see the depth chart like right. That, which y'all see, like, we never see that, or it's just who's up with the ones, then who's up with the twos, like,
right?
You just know. And if any changes are made, the coach would probably tell you in position meetings. Or when you're out there on the field and, you know, you go from there. If it's a rotation situation, then coaches will usually still have, like, the guy who's going to start in the initial first group. But, like, as the periods go on throughout the day, you might get different tandems in there. But, yeah, like, for them to – but the thing is, like, that's what I'm saying. For the depth chart that you guys get, like, the media gets, that doesn't really mean anything –
Oh, we know, but I like posting it anyway.
But that's what I'm saying. But that's the thing why it's weird too. Of like, if they they have to release it, and then they know it has nothing to, like, players, it has nothing to do with us,
right?
But like, that's not that's not a thing that somebody did on accident.
That's what I'm saying.
Especially
that's
if
not
they
an accident,
especially because they don't change it. Why would you not just send out the same? Like, who
exactly?
Made the
exactly. So
what, does blame Shea Pitts?
Yeah,
he probably in there in late hours, you know, pulling his doing his GA thing and
opened up, Excel and changed it or something. No, but that's why I was like, huh? And I mean, if you're trying to correct something or whatever, you kind of almost call more attention to it by trying to correct it. You know what I mean? Even if you just, okay, you switch it to whatever, we're going to stay here, we'll talk about it, we'll tweet about it for a day. And then, okay, then whatever, it's on to the next thing. But then you do a correction, then it's like, doesn't that get awkward between the guy? Again, they're not looking at the depth chart, even though I know for a fact one of the players that I mentioned looked at the depth chart. But what I'm saying is they see it. It's going to be on their timeline regardless. So I don't know. Like, I don't want to say it makes it awkward, but I'm just like, there's just a lack of communication in the office somewhere. Because it's like, even if it's being talked about, like, it, like,
I don't remember. The thing is, I don't remember it being on Twitter every week, though. Now that I'm thinking about it,
I don't think ours
was released that, like, I feel like there was one at the beginning of the season, and it was mainly just like a roster. Like,
yeah. Well, the depth chart, I mean, it didn't have Latu on it at all last year, even though he was a stud. Alex Johnson's not on this depth chart, and I'm assuming that's just because of the position he plays, and however they want to list the depth chart. But Alex Johnson's not even on the depth chart. So it just kind of is what it is. They still have ands and ors on Schley, Moore, and Garbers, which is why it's like, if there's going to be changes,
yeah, so
gonna
like,
be in the offense.
Yeah, yeah, they should have just kept pushing out the same one. Yeah. I don't know who. I'm saying somebody messed up. I think now I think about it, somebody messed up.
Somebody messed up.
Because all you had to do is just like copy. Or like just literally,
you don't even have to touch it. Yeah, you don't even have to touch the file. I think the only other change was maybe they changed the place kickers, I think, something like that. But no one's looking at that. So I just had to run that by you and bring that up. Again, Ali Kaho is in a boot. Ooh, Kay Medrano. Did you see Kay Medrano first defensive play? I think it's a tackle for a loss in the backfield, tackle dude for like 4 yards. So that was kind of good. Kay Medrano.
That was nice. Mm-hmm. Who we were asking about and we really saw a lot of. Femi?
Yes, Femi. That was the other one. I had that on my notes. Dude finished the game with 10 tackles. They was kind of asked after the game, like, did he feel like comfortable this week compared to last week? And he said, yeah, a little bit more prepared. You know, I think it's one of these things that coaches kind of always say, and it's kind of out there. Player may say this too, like, there's film. You can kind of like, because what I heard, you know, because I'm not an X's and O's guy, so I was just like, I was asking some of the other reporters, like, what's the deal with Femi? Like, I know he played. Everyone's asking about it. And everyone's like, he did good. He just didn't record a tackle or something. So I was like, all right. So, I mean, he's not a bum. I knew that. But, like, now all of a sudden, like, this game, 10 tackles. So things may, they may have been running the ball more his way or whatever. But he was stopping short yardage plays, pass plays. He was stopping the run. He's doing pretty good for himself.
Sometimes, you know what I'm saying? And sometimes you can have a great game and not have stats. Like, stats isn't the, you know.
I've had to learn that over time.
Because there can be times where you're like, dang, this guy had so many tackles. And it's
because, I'm like, why do they even start Josh Woods? He only gets 2 tackles a game.
And it's like, when I was playing defense end, I wasn't going to get tackles because I'm setting the edge. So most of the time, if I set the edge well, that means the ball is going to be cut inside. Like, they're not going to keep running outside because I'm out there. Therefore, I'm not going to get a tackle stat. But that's a good for my grade and guys knowing I'm playing the defense well.
Right.
Like, I'm setting the edge. I'm doing my job really well. And there could be times where a DB's getting caught on a lot and he's making the tackle after the dude catches it. Or, but one thing that I know why Femi had the numbers he had was he was running sideline to sideline. He was getting around the ball. You know, that's when linebackers are doing like that and chasing things down and, you know, like I said, running all over the field and being where the ball is, that's when the linebacker is doing good and playing well. Of course, I don't know the scheme exactly, so I can't grade it in that aspect. But from the things that I saw, and I even told you, like, yeah, look at him running sideline to sideline and you know, making tackles and getting around the ball. So that's when I was impressed. I was like, we're finally going to see him as a Bruin play.
That's the guy. That was
the things that we saw. That we saw him do at Cal. So.
So 7 of the 10 tackles were solo tackles. And then you had Darius Muasa, who was 2nd with 6 tackles. He had a sack. He had 3 tackles for a loss. Did you see the goal line stand that they had? Dante Moore fumbles the ball. The ball ends up on the 1 yard line. Well, Dante fumbles the ball. They think they recover for a touchdown. They review it, reverse it, say it's on the 1. And the defense has to start from the 1 and stuffs them.
I don't think I got to see that possession.
So, yeah. So what happened is it ended up being on the 1 yard line, and San Diego State could not get the ball in. I think Latu forced a fumble, and San Diego State recovered it. Like two plays later, I think they tried to do a trick play where they had some linemen, like 3 linemen, move out wide, and then like some of the linebackers and stuff moved out there. And then they try to throw a screen or something, and Darius picked it off in the end zone. I think it was a touchback, but yeah. And that kind of ended the game at that point. But that was something Chip kept talking about, which it was pretty much like facing adversity, getting a goal line stand like that. You know, it's against San Diego State. And we were talking about that on Twitter Spaces, where it's just like, yeah, it's against San Diego State. But even San Diego State should have probably scored in that situation. But I said, if anything, I would think it's still good for the defense's confidence. They know they can play through those situations. They can be in those situations and call back on this experience and not just say, we're on the 1 yard line no matter what we do. But if it's 1st and goal on the 1 yard line, you would think they're going to score. But no, they did pretty well for themselves. So I think that was one of the things Chip was really, really happy about to see. Just the guys come through and something. I probably need to write a story about at some point soon is I remember Darius saying at the beginning of the year, like during fall camp. Yeah. We need to create turnovers. We need to, you know, NFL scouts are looking at that. That's what Deonton Lynn's philosophy is like creating turnovers, getting tackles for losses, sacks, stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, you know, they're defenders. They're supposed to say that kind of stuff, but they're doing it. They're I think they're they might be number 1 in interceptions in the nation. I think they have like 5 or 6 already. And there's been a lot. I don't know if you look at the UCLA Twitter account after Josh, there's a lot of defensive like numbers, like defensive, like ranked top five in like a lot of defensive categories by PFF and stuff like that. So even though your defense annoyed you a little bit, they did well. I'll have to find that clip for you so you can watch it. I'm sure you'd be very proud of that drive. Any other takeaways as we kind of wrap up? I do have a question for you if you don't have anything else off the top of your head.
I mean, I'll just take the question.
Okay. The guys on Twitter Spaces want to know how you feel about throwback jerseys. Would you have liked to have had a throwback jersey game? And I'm curious, do they let you keep those jerseys? Like, did you get to keep your black jersey?
Yes. The thing is, I really did like how we used to have one special uniform alternate a year. Us going to Under Armour, we did the all white at home. We did a white out, and then we never did it again. Chip since came to UCLA has been all about tradition, which is kind of crazy because at Oregon they wore so many different uniforms, you know, alternates. But he's big on the tradition of our uniform. So I don't think that they will do that. But I think one alternate a year is always dope to do.
Well, I think they're supposed to do it for the Colorado game, which is they're going to honor former coach Terry Donahue. I think it's the 25th anniversary of some team. I can't remember off the top of my head. Sorry to disappoint all of you guys. And then it's also like homecoming or something like that. So they might have throwback uniforms for the Colorado game. So that's why they were just kind of curious about that. So again, as we wrap things up, make sure you guys go ahead and hit the subscribe button on your favorite audio or podcast platform if you haven't already. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. That is in the description of this podcast. Also, we had a special guest last week, CBS analyst Aaron Taylor joined us, and we were talking about the San Diego State game. He was actually on the call for the San Diego State game. You know, and we've had Jake Bobo, DTR, a lot of other good guests. And we may have another special one coming up here pretty soon. So stay tuned for that. Again, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on any special guests that we have in the future. But for Josh and myself, we'll catch you guys in the next one. Thank you guys for listening. This is the Believe in UCLA Football Podcast presented by Bet Online.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.